ever tried to make a big change, you know, at work, maybe in your community, even just something at home.
Yeah.
And then you just hit this unexpected resistance. Feels like pushing against an invisible wall, right?
Oh, definitely. It happens all the time.
It's because change, well, it rarely happens in a vacuum, does it?
No, never. Especially when people are involved.
Exactly. Think about, say, a busy local pub. You decide to switch up the menu.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly, your chefs, the bar staff, even your suppliers, they all feel it. They're all affected.
Right. Or you start a big refurbishment.
Yeah. And then the regulars, the neighbors, maybe even the local council suddenly have opinions. Lots of them.
It's not just about pints and crisps, is it? It's fundamentally about people.
It really is. And that's why today we're doing a deep dive into stakeholder mapping.
Ah, yes. A crucial tool.
It's this powerful technique that can genuinely determine whether your plans, well, succeed or totally flop. Not just in a pub scenario, but really anywhere people in change mix.
Yeah, understanding the human element is key.
So maybe you could kick us off. What exactly is a stakeholder?
Sure. So essentially a stakeholder is,
well,
it's anyone who affects or is affected by whatever change you're trying to make.
Oh.
That covers internal folks like your staff, managers.
Yeah.
But also external people. Think loyal customers, your suppliers, maybe the local council, like you said. Anyone with a stake in the outcome.
Got it. Internal and external.
And the tool most people use to sort of get a handle on these different groups, it's called the power interest grid.
Mm-hmm.
Helps you visualize who really matters in a given situation.
Right. Power interest grid. We'll definitely unpack that. So our mission today is really to help you navigate these often tricky waters, figure out who truly matters when you're making a change, how best to talk to them, and ultimately how to make those changes actually stick.
Exactly. Hopefully provide some aha moments.
Yeah, hopefully shift how you approach planning, you know, whatever project you're tackling next. So, okay, we've defined stakeholders, but why is identifying them so critical? Why dedicate a whole deep dive to it? Couldn't we just, you know, focus on the brilliant idea itself, the new menu, the cool refurb? Isn't that the main thing?
That's a really common perspective, actually.
Huh?
But what often gets missed, sometimes even by experienced managers, is that the most amazing idea can completely fall flat if you don't bring the right people along with you.
Mm.
If you ignore key stakeholders, well, you risk alienating your staff. You could lose loyal customers who feel like they haven't been heard. Or maybe you end up clashing with authorities over rules you didn't even know about.
Right, the compliance side.
Exactly. So it's not just about avoiding failure. It's more proactive than that. It's about actively building support, reducing that resistance before it even starts.
Building bridges, essentially.
Essentially. Without considering the human element, even a technically perfect plan can just unravel.
And these lessons, they go beyond just pubs, right?
Oh, absolutely. These principles, figuring out who's affected, who has influence, they apply to pretty much any project involving people.
Right.
A new IT system at work, planning a community fair, even, you know, big decisions within a family sometimes.
That covers a lot of ground.
It really does. Pretty much everything involves people eventually.
Okay, so let's get into the nuts and bolts then. This power interest grid. It sounds a bit technical, maybe?
It can sound that way, but it's actually incredibly intuitive once you break it down.
Okay.
You basically plot your stakeholders on two simple axes. First is power.
Right.
Which just means their ability to influence decisions. Can they actually stop your project or maybe significantly help it along?
Okay. So their clout, basically.
Yeah, their clout. And the second axis is interest. How much do they actually care about the specific change you're making?
Ah, so is it a big deal for them personally?
Exactly. Does it really affect their day-to-day life or work, or is it just sort of background noise for them?
Gotcha. Power and interest.
But here's a crucial insight, something people often miss. A stakeholder's position on this grid, it isn't fixed. It's not static.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, someone who seems like low power, high interests today, maybe the junior staff member who really cares about the change if they feel ignored, they could quickly rally others, build collective resistance, and suddenly become a high power blocker tomorrow.
So you need to keep reassessing.
Definitely. This mapping, it's a living document. It needs to adapt as the situation changes, not just a one-off snapshot.
That makes sense. It's dynamic. So let's walk through those core quadrants then, using our pub examples, but keeping in mind, these types show up everywhere.
Okay, sounds good. First up, high power, high interest. These are the folks you absolutely must manage closely.
Right. The top priority group.
Definitely. In our pub world, think of the owners, landlords, they hold the purse strings, the property rights.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a tied pub, the brewery's in here too, controlling supply, pricing, contracts.
Big players.
It's huge. And don't forget, the pub manager and maybe senior staff, they're the ones leading the change on the ground. If you're planning that refurbishment we talked about, your landlord and the brewery have to be fully involved right from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Their active buy-in isn't optional, it's essential.
So they're your core team, really. You're building this with them.
Exactly. You're partners in it.
Yeah.
Okay, next quadrant. High power, low interest. These are the stakeholders you need to keep satisfied.
Keep satisfied?
Yeah.
How does that differ?
Well, think of the local council or maybe the licensing body. They might not care one bit about your fancy new craft beer menu.
Probably not, no.
But they hold immense power when it comes to things like compliance, noise regulations, health and safety. Their interest in your specific change might be low, but their power to affect you is very high if you don't follow the rules.
So tread carefully.
Right. For that refurb, you need to proactively talk to the council, reassure them about noise levels during building work, make sure all safety regs are met. You don't need their opinion on the new wallpaper.
Rah.
But you absolutely need their sign-off on the structural stuff. Keep them happy by showing you're compliant.
Got it. It's like that quiet but powerful regulatory body. Just tick their boxes, follow the rules, and they likely won't get in your way.
Precisely. Okay, moving on. Low power, high interest. These are the people you need to keep informed.
Low power, high interest. Who falls here?
This is often your staff, the bartenders, the cellar hands, the kitchen team. They care deeply about changes like new rotas, a different menu, new ways of working, because it directly impacts their job every single day.
Makes sense.
Your regular customers are often in this box, too. They might not have formal power to stop you painting the walls blue.
But they'll definitely have an opinion.
Oh, absolutely. They have a strong emotional investment. And if they feel ignored, they can really damage your reputation through word of mouth, online reviews.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of informal power that shouldn't be underestimated.
Good point.
So, thinking about that new menu again. A smart move is to maybe test some new dishes with your regulars first. Get their feedback, win them over. They can become your biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah, they're kind of the heartbeat of the place, aren't they? Their feedback, even if they can't veto things, is super valuable for making sure the change actually works on the ground. And their mood affects the whole atmosphere.
Totally agree. Okay, last box. Low power, low interest. These stakeholders, you generally just need a monitor only.
Monitor only, so minimal effort.
Relatively, yes. Mm. Think about your one-off customers, tourists maybe. They might notice if the pub looks different or the menu changes.
But they're not deeply invested.
Exactly. They won't be heavily affected. And they don't have much power. They're not really a priority for detailed consultation or lots of communication. They just want a decent pint and maybe some directions.
Okay, so putting it all together, this grid basically tells you where to focus your limited time and energy, and crucially, how to engage with each different group.
That's it. It stops you from trying to treat everyone the same, which just doesn't work. It's about being strategic.
So a huge takeaway then is that this mapping directly informs your communication strategy. You can't just send out one email blast to everyone.
Absolutely not. A one-size-fits-all approach is doomed to fail here. The message itself, the channel you use, even the tone of voice, it all needs tailoring.
Right. You wouldn't tell your landlord about a menu change with just a cheeky sign on the chalkboard, would you?
Huh. Probably not the best approach, no.
So the channel and tone are critical, but does the actual content of the message change dramatically too?
Oh, definitely. Let's take internal stakeholders, like your staff. Recommended channels. Things like pre-shift briefings, maybe a dedicated WhatsApp group, one-on-one chats.
More direct, personal channel.
Exactly. And the message needs to focus on why this change is happening, how it's going to specifically affect their job, and what support or training they'll get. It's about making them feel secure and empowered, addressing their immediate worries.
Okay, that makes sense. And for externals?
It varies hugely. For your regulars, low power, high interest, things like posters, those chalkboards we mentioned, updates in a Facebook group, those work well. The tone can be informal, maybe a bit cheeky but clear, reflecting that pub vibe.
Keep it friendly.
Yeah. But then for your suppliers, much more formal. You're talking proper emails, maybe contract review meetings. The tone needs to be professional.
Businesslike.
Right. And dealing with your landlord or brewery, high power, high interest. You need detailed written proposals, formal review meetings. The tone here has to be detailed, data-driven. They want the business case, the numbers, the solid plan.
Show them the money. basically.
Pretty much. And finally, the council, high power, low interest. Mm-hmm. It's all about official compliance forms, maybe scheduled progress updates if it's a big project. Keep the tone strictly formal. Each group needs a completely different approach.
It's like speaking different languages to different audiences.
In a way, yes. The source actually gives some great specific pub scenarios that show this in action.
Oh, cool. Let's hear them. Makes them more tangible.
Okay, so scenario one, refurbishment. We touched on this. For your landlord and brewery, the high power, high interest group, you'd present that detailed proposal. Timeline, costings, projected ROI, full business case.
Okay.
For your regulars, low power, high interest, maybe just a simple upbeat poster. Heads up, we're getting a makeover, back open, looking sharp on May 12th. Something like that.
Nice and simple.
And for the council, high power, low interest. It's about formally notifying them of the building work schedule, submitting any required plans, ensuring permits are sorted. Purely procedural.
Three very different interactions for the same project.
Exactly. Now, scenario two, new menu launch. Here, you'd absolutely prioritize training your bar and kitchen teams, maybe even get their input on dish practicalities.
Involve the staff, right?
Definitely. You might invite your top 10 or 20 loyal customers, your high-interest regulars, to a special tasting night. Get their buy-in early.
Smart. Make them feel special.
And for your food and drink suppliers. It's all about coordinating deliveries for new ingredients, maybe negotiating new prices. Very practical, professional conversations.
Okay. And the last one.
Scenario three. Introducing a new tech system, like a point of sale, POS, or a digital Rota app. This heavily impacts staff, so dedicated training sessions, maybe trial shifts, are crucial.
Gotta get them comfortable with it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For the owner or landlord, high power, high interest, you need to clearly show the return on investment, the ROI. How will this save time? Reduce errors? Improve stock control? Show the business benefits.
Focus on the bottom line for them.
And you might need to ensure the new system integrates smoothly with, say, the brewery's ordering platform, if that's relevant. Another practical consideration.
It all sounds so logical when we lay it out like this, but
yeah.
Where do things typically go wrong? What are the common tripwires people hit in the real world?
Ah, knowing the pitfalls is key. The source points out a few common ones. First, overlooking quiet voices.
Quiet voices.
Yeah. Think about kitchen staff, for example. They often bear the brunt of menu changes or new processes, but sometimes they're missed in consultations because they're busy, or maybe less vocal than front of house.
Right. Out of sight, out of mind sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But their perspective is invaluable. It's not just about noticing these quiet voices. It's about actively creating ways to hear them and really use their insights.
So make an effort to seek them out.
Definitely. The second pitfall is info overload.
Ah, giving too much detail.
Precisely. We get wrapped up in the technicalities of the change, the nitty-gritty, and forget who we're talking to. Customers, for instance, probably don't need a detailed explanation of your new cellar cooling system.
They just want a cold beer.
Exactly. Keep messages simple, clear, and focused on what's relevant to that specific audience.
Good reminder. Less is often more.
And the third one is power imbalance. This is a tricky one. It's where maybe the landlord's demands completely overshadow the tenant pub manager's needs, even if the manager knows their local market better.
Or the brewery insists on certain beers that just don't sell well there.
Yeah, that kind of thing. The power and interest grid helps you identify these imbalances, but actually navigating them requires careful strategy and negotiation.
Tricky political ground sometimes.
It can be. And this actually raises a really important point.
Yeah.
How do we make sure engagement is structured enough to overcome these barriers? The source suggests a useful tool here, the RACI model.
RACI, what's that stand for?
It stands for Responsible, Accountable, Consulted, and Informed. It's a framework to clarify exactly who does what in a project or process.
Okay, break that down.
Sure. Responsible is the person or people who actually do the work. Accountable is the one person ultimately answerable for making sure it gets done correctly. Usually, only one person is accountable. Consulted are the people whose input is needed, the experts, the ones affected who need a say, and informed are the people who just need to be kept in the loop about progress or decisions.
Ah, okay. So it clarifies roles and communication lines.
Exactly. Let's apply it quickly to our new menu launch.
Okay.
The head chef might be responsible for creating the new dishes. The pub manager is probably accountable for the overall success and profitability of the new menu.
Right. The buck stops with them.
The bar and waiting staff would definitely need to be trashed. Consulted on things like how easy the dishes are to serve, potential customer questions, impact on workflow.
Get their practical input.
And maybe your key suppliers just need to be informed about the launch date and the new ingredients you'll be ordering.
Got it. That seems like a really clear way to map out who needs to be involved and how. Avoids confusion.
It really helps structure things.
You know, there's nothing quite like a good story, a real-world example, to really hammer a point home.
Mm-hmm.
Did the source mention any specific pubs that got stakeholder mapping right? Or maybe spectacularly wrong?
It did, actually. Some cautionary tales and some successes. First, the cautionary tale, the Queen's Arms.
Okay, what happened there?
They apparently went ahead with a major refurbishment, but pretty much ignored their regulars throughout the process, didn't communicate well, didn't ask for input.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. The result, when they reopened, the loyal customers felt completely blindsided, alienated even, and their footfall, the number of people coming in, apparently dipped significantly and stayed low for months.
Ouch. That hurts the bottom line in the atmosphere.
A very costly mistake. Not just in lost revenue, but in damaging that crucial trust and goodwill they had built up.
A tough lesson. What about a success story?
On the flip side, there's the Red Lion. Before they launched a new menu, they were really diligent. They properly mapped out their stakeholders.
Yes, the grid.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
They consulted staff extensively, and they actively involved their regulars, invited them to tasting sessions, got feedback.
Smart move we talked about earlier.
Exactly. And the payoff was huge. Their Sunday roast sales apparently jumped by something like 40%.
Wow, 40%.
Yeah, a clear win that shows the power of involving people proactively.
That's a massive difference. Any others?
One more success story. The Ship Inn. Their challenge was a refurbishment that needed council approval.
Ah, the high power, low interest group.
Precisely. They engaged with the local council really early in their planning stages. They proactively addressed all the compliance issues, safety regulations, that sort of thing.
Got ahead of the potential problems.
Right. And because of that foresight, they secured all the necessary approvals quickly and smoothly, allowed them to stick to their timeline and reopen exactly on schedule.
Which, in a refurb project, avoiding delays is huge. Saves money, saves stress.
Absolutely massive. Delays can be incredibly costly.
These examples really brought home, don't they? They're not just abstract concepts. They show the real-world impact, positive and negative, of how you manage these relationships.
It's the difference between a project thriving and one that struggles or even fails, often due to easily avoidable people-related issues.
It really underlines that foresight and structured engagement pay off.
And speaking of structure, the source even mentioned some practical toolkit ideas to help people apply this.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Well, obviously, a template for the Power Interest Grid itself is a good starting point. Makes the mapping easier.
Visualizing it helps.
Definitely. Then maybe a communication matrix template that helps you plan who you need to tell what, when, and how. Tailoring the message like we discussed.
Organizing that communication plan.
Exactly. And even something like a standard stakeholder meeting agenda template, just to ensure those crucial conversations stay focused, cover the right points, and lead to clear actions.
So these aren't just, you know, fancy corporate buzzwords. They're actual practical tools.
Absolutely. They're concrete ways anyone can take these ideas and apply them straight away. Whether you're managing a small team, launching a product, planning that community event, they just help demystify the process, give you actionable steps.
Makes it less daunting.
Hopefully, yeah.
So wrapping things up a bit. This deep dive has really shown, I think, that stakeholder mapping isn't just some optional management strategy. It feels more like a fundamental survival skill for anyone trying to navigate change successfully.
I'd agree with that.
By taking the time to identify who really matters, figuring out the best way to communicate with them, involving them early, you just avoid so much potential backlash. You build trust instead. And the changes you make are far more likely to actually stick.
Yeah, it's about understanding that whole ecosystem of human interaction that exists around any project, big or small.
Yeah, the ecosystem. I like that.
And it really reinforces that core idea.
Yeah.
Any venture, whether it's a pub or a tech startup or a charity campaign, ultimately runs on people, not just the products or services.
Sure.
Understanding that human element, what are their concerns, how much influence do they have, what do they need from you, that understanding is just absolutely critical for lasting success. It changes how you see problems and how you find solutions.
So as everyone listening reflects on this, maybe think about the next big decision or project you've got coming up. Could be work, could be personal. Who are the regulars in your world? The people deeply interested, maybe, but who you might be forgetting to invite to that metaphorical tasting session.
Good question.
Or who are the landlords, the high power, high interest folks you absolutely need to bring into the discussion right from day one?
And crucially, what about those quiet voices, the ones who are maybe deeply affected, but perhaps less likely to speak up unless you actively create the space for them. Who do you need to make an extra effort to listen to?
Lots to think about there. The insights we've shared today, drawn from looking at how this works, even in a setting like a pub, they're really just the start.
Absolutely.
But hopefully it shows the power of understanding and engaging your stakeholders. It really can transform how you approach any change, big or small.
Couldn't agree more. It's fundamental.